read a book.
We did, but can we put a pin in that and let's talk about something very fun and exciting.
Yeah.
Zoom book release party. What's its official name?
Faded,
the book? I don't know, Faded Mates
Live. It's
called
Bombshell.
Shut up, Sarah, I know. Stop it.
It's a live Faded Mates episode.
It is.
Which basically kind of like railroaded HarperCollins into letting us do this. They were like, what do you want to do for a launch? We have some bookstores that want to, you know, host it. So that's super exciting. Five, romance-friendly.
Yes.
Important note.
Yes.
Independent bookstores are hosting it.
Tell us the names. Do you remember?
Yes, I do. I can do it. Northshire Books in Saratoga, East City Bookshop in D.C., Katie Budget Books in your in-law's hometown of Katy, Texas, Old Town Books in Alexandria, the host of the Faded Mates annual book box, so thanks Old Town, and Mysterious Galaxy in San Diego, the West Coast bringing up.
Sure, the rear.
The West Coast. The best coast.
Sure.
I don't know.
It's pretty great.
That's what they say. It seems nice in San Diego, honestly. It's a little too nice. It's like if one time I was there and I for a book conference and I was with, I think, Susan Elizabeth Phillips, and I was like, San Diego's really nice. And she said, yes, but it's so nice. It feels like a lot of dentists live here. And I mean, was like,
I get it.
Is that a... She's like, dentists always live in nice places and they always have boats.
My brother Mike's partner's family lives there. And so I have some in-laws in San Diego and I have not visited them, but I would like to. I was in Old Town Books in Alexandria just a few weeks ago when I was in D.C.
Were you? Jennifer, did you say hello and introduce yourself?
I was awkward and weird about it. Like, I sort of,
I bet
like,
you were.
I was. Sorry. I sidled up to the counter and was kind of like, are you one of the owners? Because I, you know.
Yeah.
And she was like, no. And I was like, okay, well, I'm Jen.
And then you wandered
Jen
off.
Jen Reads Romance. And she was like, oh, which was nice. But
that is nice.
You know. So it was really cool. It was a great shop.
They just moved during the pandemic. They moved from one shop to another.
It's really, really cute in there. So I had a good time. And I bought some books.
So these five stores were like, we'd like to host it. And then I said... And then Harper said, who should we invite to be part of it? And I said, oh, let me handle it.
Good idea.
And then I was like, surprise, Harper, we're doing a live Faded Mates episode. Jen's going to host it. And here are 10 authors who we really love.
It's going to be amazing.
And I think Harper was a little bit like, well, I guess this is happening then. But anyway, Avon has been very supportive. And the authors are Andy J. Christopher, Kate Claiborne, Sophie Jordan, Christina Lauren, Adriana Herrera, Tracy Livesey, Diana Quincy, Joanna Shoup, Kennedy Ryan, and Alexis Daria.
It's going to be amazing.
It's going to be awesome.
So time, place is
it's on Crowdcast, August 24th at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. We will put links in show notes for how to get there, but it's actually bit.ly/bombshellbook. So, you know, you can find it there, or you can find it on our Instagram or on our Twitter or on my Sarah's Instagram and Twitter. It's basically everywhere. It shouldn't be difficult for you to find it, but it will be a full live episode of Faded Mates. The ticket price is a copy of Bombshell, but you also get with it event exclusive stickers. Each store has a different cool sticker. And I will send Faded... How about this? I'll send Faded Mates stickers to each of the stores, too.
See? There
we'll see
you
if
go.
We can get those stuck in, too.
I'm sure we can.
And that's that. And if you've ordered from Word, because we've been talking about Word and pre-orders and Faded Mates stickers, don't worry. Check your email next week sometime or in a... You know, at some point, and you'll get an email from Word with a login information. You have access to this too, but Perfect. Word is not one of the sponsors for the event.
Perfect. So fun.
So fun. So it's going to be, if you've been to one of our live episodes before, our 100th episode or our 100th episode, that doesn't seem right. Whatever. Our 100th episode, or we did a Julie Garwood episode when we were writing postcards for Faded States.
It's really fun. We're going to have a great time.
We're going to have a great time. Jen's in charge.
Yes. It'll be lots of giggling. I'm excited about it.
So that's that. That's housekeeping.
That is a little housekeeping.
By the way, welcome everyone to Faded Mates. I'm Sarah McLean. I write romance novels and I read them.
And I'm Jennifer Prokop. I am a romance reader and critic. And this week, we are doing probably what will be our last read-along of season 3.
Yes. Right? I think so.
Yeah.
Except for Bombshell.
Except for Bombshell. That would be the official end of season 3, which is Unmasked by the Marquis by...
Cat Sebastian. Unmasked by the Marquis. Sometimes I think of it as unmasking the Marquis, and that is the opposite of what it is.
Right. Unmasked.
It is unmasked by the Marquis.
Yes. This is a terrific.
It's great, super, right?
I read it for the first time. Yeah.
For I haven't read it since it came out. And when it came out, I really loved it. And then, you know, I just haven't reread it. And then we decided to read it this time, and there were a couple things in it that I was like, I forgot how bonkers this book is.
It's perfect.
It's so good perfect. And bonkers.
So it was 2017, and if you were not around, this is one of those
full
books,
millennium ago.
I know, that made a huge splash. It's one of those books I almost can't believe I didn't read when it came out. Mm-hmm. But you know how it was right there on my Kindle. I mean, I bought it. So and it was also one of those books that got, and I mean, I am not exaggerating, a starred review from every outlet that gives starred reviews. So it was a real juggernaut of a book. And it's also one of those books that sometimes when you go back and read those, you think, could it, you know, is it going to really be that good? And I'm here to tell you the answer, friends, is yes, it is that good. So
it really is, because it's kind of like the perfect marriage of a modern historical and an old school, like,
yes,
what is happening? Everything is kind of wacky historical, yes. Right?
Well, I feel like, you know what?
Well, there are so many, like, personalities and, like, the conflict is so solid and, like, it just, there's, and but then, like, at the end, it's kind of like, and then this happens, and then this happens, and then this happens, and it's like, boop, 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 boop. And then I'm like, I forgot that all this happened at the end.
It's really terrific.
It's really fun. It's a fun book.
It is a fun book. And I think that is, oh boy, you know what it is? It just really feels like when I talk about how reading romance, like, makes me feel, this is a book that really captures, like, this is probably easily now going to be one of those books where someone's like, just recommend a great romance to me. I don't care what it's about. I would easily put this book into that bucket, right?
Yes.
I feel like it's a real crowd pleaser. Anyone would love to read it. I loved reading it. So before we get started, though, I do want to talk a little bit about how we're going to tackle. One of our main characters is non-binary. So given the time period in the afterwards, Cat Sebastian says that she uses she and her to describe this character who was born Charity Church. She was a foundling and left at a, you know, on the church door. And then she becomes a maid for this household where she becomes part of the family. And then Robbie, who's the son of this family, tells her, you know, I don't want to go to Cambridge. You go as me. And this is when she takes on the persona of what at first is the persona of Robbie Selby, right? She essentially is impersonating this boy she grew up with. But by this time, the book takes place, which is 5 years later. So she's what, 25, 24? That persona has really become not a persona. It's become her identity.
Yeah.
And so in the book refers to her as she and her, both in her point of view and also in Alistair's, the other main character's point of view. But I think what we're going to try and do, because it feels like even in the 3 or 4 years since this book has been published, it feels like it's just right to use they, them.
Well, and also importantly, more importantly, Kat, in her author's note, says
now
that at the time she chose she, her, because she didn't think that Robin would have a problem with that.
Right.
But that when Kat writes about or talks about the book, she talks about Robin as Robin and uses they, them.
Right.
So we're going to do our very best to follow Kat's lead on this.
Yeah.
With apologies if we slip up.
So let's get started.
Do you want to do a plot overview?
Oh, I was like, how could you even?
I mean, you kind of, I know there's so much. Okay. I think we should at least do the setup because the setup is like a classic historical, like.
Oh, absolutely.
oops, we need money. Oops, we need money. Oops, I'm not who you think I am. Like, it's right. very fun. So, and then I do want to talk about this book as like kind of a masterclass in plotting in like a three-act structure.
Yes.
Anyway, but it's important to start with what this book is about.
So our main characters are Alistair.
Yeah, Alistair. Did you listen to it?
I drove to Indianapolis, back and forth to Indianapolis yesterday, and I listened in the car for a good part of it.
Was it great?
Yeah, it was great. Good. So Alistair is one of our main characters. He is our Marquis, and he is a, oh my God, I don't think anyone does Grumpy Sunshine like Cat Sebastian. And
it's her favorite, right?
And you know what? It's my favorite too. Because
it's like there's this. Somebody once said to me, "Cat Sebastian is where I go to for the best cat, for the best Cap Bucky fan fiction."
Yeah,
and I was like, "Cool." So, and I see it. It's right. definitely here.
Right. So, his father was essentially a spendthrift. He really like depleted the estates and the family money and name. And part of the reason that this is so painful for Alistair is because his father also had a second family, right? So he had a mistress who he put up in another house. We're going to be talking about mistresses next week with Adriana Herrera, so we might revisit this book for some of that. And this woman had three daughters. And so he's pretty, you know, sort of like, I've finally gotten the estate back to where it needs to be, and we're no longer just like sort of money running through like a sieve. Yeah. And this is really important to him.
So Alistair is like a real jerk.
Oh, God, yes.
At the beginning of this book. Uh-huh. And I had forgotten that, too. But, like, there's the first couple chapters, you're like, this dude's terrible. Just terrible.
Well, and in audio especially, I was like, I'm sorry.
Well, because he, like, thinks of this mistress as terrible.
Yeah.
And then he thinks of her children as terrible. Yes. And you're like, I don't like this at all. But right. It's fine. You guys, spoiler, it's all going to turn out fine.
He's going to turn out fine. It's going to turn out fine. So as soon as his father's mistress arrives and says, look, I know you don't want to see me, but my oldest daughter needs to come out. And if you would just arrange for her to go to like one luncheon, I'm not asking you to hold a ball, but just like one nice thing you could do is like pave the way for your sister here, your father's natural child. And he, of course, is like, man, get out. I'm a terrible person, you know, out with you. And then, literally the next second, there's a knock on the door, and it's the butler again. There's a person at the door, and it is Robert Selby. And this young man has come to claim that his father was the godfather to Robert's younger sister, Amelia. She also wants to come out, and they, of course, scraped up just enough to get to London for the season. But Robert went to Cambridge and was hoping that, like, his kind of friends would be able to introduce Amelia to somebody nice, but it's not working out that way. Could Alistair possibly help them too? So this is a classic, like a really classic setup, right? Like the Marquis who thinks everyone is out for his money, and then it turns out everyone in fact needs favors and whatever from him. But what we figure out really quickly within the next chapter, I think, is Robert goes home to Amelia, and it turns out that Robert is not Robert, but rather they were, again, born Charity. And later on in the book, Alistair is going to rename Robert Robin. You don't seem like a Robert to me. Robbie's too young. I'm going to call you Robin. And the real Robbie has died, mm-hmm. right? But Robin knows that if they feel this huge amount of responsibility to Amelia. Robbie did not leave money for his sister's dowry like he should have.
And importantly, Amelia was basically raised to be a lady. She's not in a position. Everybody's a little concerned that poor Amelia just won't be able to figure herself out, which, you know, is a little bit nonsensical. But because it's historical, you're like,
well, she's poor, also sad, very poor, sad Amelia. Young, right? I mean, she's 16 or 17. So isn't that the case? So I also think it's that.
Well, there's a sense that if Amelia had been left to her own, if they had sort of done what they should have done, which is allow Robert to have died.
Right. Pass it on to the nearest relative.
There was just no.
Right.
There was no way that Amelia was going to be taken care of.
Right. Right.
Also, please remember, and this is going to become important when we talk about the third act, but, like, Robert wasn't exactly the best of anything.
The real Robert. Right.
The real Robert.
As opposed to Robin. Right.
Robin is a different thing. Robin is amazing, and I love them. So.
Right.
So here we are, and we have this really interesting arc of Robin as heroic figure, right? Like, Robin has basically given up all of their life to protecting Amelia and seeing Amelia into society. And we don't know when it starts really why. It feels a little bit like they are, they feel beholden to Robert Selby and to kind of protecting Amelia because they were given this opportunity to have a more expansive life.
Right.
Because Robert essentially traded places, allowed them to trade places with him.
The other thing that I think that this book does so brilliantly is really lay out class differences and just how difficult it would be to be in Amelia's case, raised in one class and not be able to exist or live in that class. And I think a big part of the reason we see Robin doing what they do is because they understand in a way that Amelia doesn't just what it would mean to have no one and nothing. And they are determined. And in a, I mean, this is probably one of the most good-hearted characters I've ever read in romance.
So absolutely giving of themselves. It's but bananas.
But not in a, like, I don't know, like, not in a way that makes me feel uncomfortable or that they're sacrificing too much. In a way that just genuinely feels like this is a person who just wants to do the right thing.
Well, it's chalked up to good writing, Jen.
Yes.
I mean, Kat essentially lays down on this page this worldview that is really wrapped up in sacrifice. And I want to talk about the way sacrifice presents itself on the page in this book, because there are a number of places where we see different versions of sacrifice as noble and not noble.
Right.
Right.
Absolutely.
So we see right from the start, and this sort of ties in with the class question, but right in the very beginning, we see Alistair, the hero, really terrible.
Yes.
Being asked to make a sacrifice, right? Like, you, your father had these children.
Right. He acknowledged other children.
Your sisters.
Right.
He acknowledged them. They need to come out.
Yeah.
And so can you please help?
Right.
And he's like, I'm not doing that. That is a sacrifice I am not willing to make.
And it's a very small sacrifice, to be honest, right? This would be, it would literally cost him nothing except his pride.
And the whole of society knows these kids exist.
Right.
So it's not like he's, you know, terrified of being, also everybody had a mistress, everybody had bastard children.
Right.
And then there's Robin's kind of ultimate sacrifice, which is a little of both. They sacrificed in order to give Amelia more, but also gain from it, right? There, it's like, it's that moment where you sort of feel like, okay, well, this is a give and take.
Right. I think the other thing it's worth saying at this point is that Robin and Amelia have created a bit of a found family for themselves with their two other people who know what is going on, right? Like, know the subterfuge. And I'm putting that in air quotes because it's really important to remember that Robin really has a lot of regret about sort of cheating this cousin out of their inheritance.
Yes.
But zero regret about living in this way.
Sure. Because that, they get something out of it, right?
Right.
They get the freedom of their identity.
Yes, exactly.
And I think this is where Kat really does a brilliant job of threading the needle because she tells this story about a non-binary character in a historical world, right? Where, and when we talk about this in historicals, we've talked about it on the podcast before, when writers get together and talk about it in historicals, there is this balance of, like, what is historically accurate versus what is, like, modern, and what, you know, how the two can coexist. And I think if you are working on a historical and you're trying to figure out how these two can coexist, Kat really does this beautifully, because what she does is she, the conflict of, you know, everyone knows I love a book about identity.
Right.
Robin's identity is a huge piece of their conflict over the course of the book and a big piece of the first and second act conflict, right? But at no point are they judged for their identity as a non-binary person, although they don't have that language, to use it. But at the same time, the main conflict of the second act, or, you know, nearing the second act, is Alistair decides, I want to marry this person.
Right.
And then it's like, well, how does that work? Right. Because Robin is living in men's clothing at this point. So legally, that's not going to happen.
Right.
And, you know, Kat does a really beautiful job of stitching it together without using trauma.
As an identifier. I think the thing that I think is really important to me, but I also think, I will just say as a reader, when I read the afterword, there's sort of this like, you know, and we've talked about this when like Black authors write historical romance, right? This feeling that like there are readers out there who are like,
I have to prove it to you.
And I was really, I don't have to say this, but like, this is a terrific romance. I never at any point thought this couldn't happen or this didn't feel real. And I don't know if that's dumb to even say, but like, I was so surprised to read that at the end because I thought, boy, if you got through all the way to this book and were just like hate reading it, I guess maybe this afterword is for you. But this is such a delightful story.
It's so good. It's such a good, I mean, this is what I said at the beginning. It's there by the time you get to the second, so the end of the second act. So, all right, we're getting ahead of ourselves, but
always
I want to talk about the first act because, like I said, I don't know Kat very well at all, but I wonder if she is a plotter because it's such a perfect three act structure, right? The first act, the first 30% of the book, and I checked the percentages because I was like, oh, here's the turning point. And I was like, we're at exactly 30%. Like, so well done. Anyway, Robin turns up, tells essentially a lie that in actual fact, Alistair's father was not Amelia's godfather.
Right.
So there's no real reason why Alistair needs to help.
It's interesting because let me go back. Alistair then at this point sort of is like, these two people want me to do something I don't want to do.
And there's been a kiss.
Right. Well, let me back up.
Oh, sorry. You're before that.
Yeah. Alistair's like, I'm going to plan a ball and invite these people. And then you know what? If they all fuck it up, that's on them. And it's not really going to be my problem. But no one will ever ask me for help again. But he and Robin become friends. And then we understand that Robin obviously feels attracted to Alistair, and Alistair is bisexual and again doesn't have a word for that, but feels attracted to Robin and there's this really great line before we get to the kiss where he says something like, and I was listening to the audiobook, so I wasn't able to mark it, but it was something essentially like, you know, he didn't really let himself think about men like that anymore. Mm-hmm. So we know that there must have been a point in his past when he was younger that he did have some sort of love affair or, you know, crush or something on another man. But now that just seems untoward. He kind of can't really, he's not ashamed of it, but he just feels like, I think at some point he says, it seems like wanton, right? Like I should just decide already. And so when they have this kiss, right? He, at this point, and Kat, talk about taking the finger. Their first kiss is when Alistair doesn't know that Robin was
non-binary.
Non-binary, right? And I think it's a really interesting scene because Robin is so into it too, but is afraid of what will happen if at that moment it's
right. What's clever about it is that Kat twists the power in this moment, right? And gives it almost entirely to Robin.
Yes, Robin says no.
Which is, so obviously, like, when you're writing a historical, the Marquis usually has all the power.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And in an MF historical, in a sort of cishet historical, the Marquis has all the power. And when you give heroines power, you're giving them subversive power always, right? So in this book, what Kat's doing is navigating this the power of identity, right? So where Alistair would ordinarily be the character who has power, that kiss is relinquishing his power, yeah, right?
Right?
Because even if Robin were born a, you know, gentry, right? He's not Lord. He just has money.
Right.
Even if Robin were born, you know, a moneyed,
sure,
you know, assigned male at birth.
Right.
Right. Then in that moment, the Marquis would have all the power, and that kiss would be gay and illegal. And Kat acknowledges that, right? And
right.
She says, like, that's something that, like, as a Marquis, you can't do
right.
Without trusting that the person you are with
right.
is telling you the truth, right? And so he releases power to Robin in that moment, and then when it is revealed later, and first, and also that kiss is awesome. The POV of it is awesome because it's in Robin's POV, and they're like, "I'm not gonna respond. Like, I'm just gonna let this happen to me because I feel like I'm betraying Alistair by not telling him the truth about me."
Right.
But then it happens, and they're like, "This is great. I want to do it.
I want to do it so much." Right.
So then the lie comes up.
Right.
And Alistair discovers, like, it's impossible. My father could not have possibly been the godfather of this woman, this girl.
Amelia. Right.
Right. And so he calls Robin to him and is basically like, "You lied to me."
I've got to tell you, this scene plays out. I mean, one of the things I like best in a romance is being surprised, right?
Yeah.
So one of the things that I think I'm sort of, now, this is a tricky thing. I would not call this a book that's, even though there's like lies based in the book, these things, at this point, Robin's identity really is like, I don't want to be a woman. This identity, when I'm out in the world as Robert Selby, I like how this feels. This feels like me.
Right.
So I'm kind of like, how are you going to like reveal this without setting up this person's identity as a lie?
As a lie.
Because yes. It's not. As the reader, I'm like kind of like, how is this going to turn out? Because here we are at 30%. And if Alistair says, like, you lied to me about your identity, how do you come back from that?
Also, right? Like, Alistair is on thin ice.
Yes.
Right? Like, Alistair's one step from cold storage at this point.
Yes.
Right? Like, we're charmed by him now. Like, and he's turning into a nice enough guy. But, like, we still remember when he hated his stepsisters or half-sisters.
Sure.
And so,
So I'm kind of like, you could really screw this up in a way that it feels irreparable to me at this point. And instead, what Robin does is say, how could I possibly blackmail you? As it turns out, I am not Robert Selby. I was born Charity Church.
It's like a Scooby-Doo moment. It's like, they pull off the mask.
And they reveal it all because, and this is so, the idea of hurting Alistair is so painful that they give up the entire gambit, essentially, right, with Amelia and the purpose and what they're trying to do. And I really was, okay, I feel bad because it's a painful moment in the text, but I was delighted by it as a reader.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
It then opens up the whole can, like everything
changes. So good, right? Because whenever readers are like, everything will be solved by a conversation, right?
Yes.
Here's a perfect example. Yes, the original concern in that he can't go to jail is solved.
Right.
But it's complicated by this conversation. And what's amazing is in the moment, Alistair's response is, how could you possibly think that discovering this lie about your identity would make me feel better? He's saying, why didn't you trust me enough to tell me the truth about you?
Right. And this is this moment where I, as the reader, was like, they're like a perfect match, right?
Yeah.
Of all the things that Alistair is judgmental about, this is not one of them.
No.
Right? This is not one of them. And he basically is like, I'm attracted to you for you. And this attraction, I feel, is driven by, like, the person you are and your champagne cork of a laugh and how I feel when I'm with you, right?
I know, it's so romantic.
It is. I mean, I've read a lot of romances. I feel like, oh, okay, I get how a plot like this, where somebody's hiding something from someone else, gets revealed at some later part. But instead, you know, you blow the doors off of that 30%. And now you're
now
like,
everything
okay,
has to shift.
Well, now, and he's everything has to shift.
Now, right. To be fair, he's furious at this point. Because completely. He's like, everything you've ever said to me is a lie. Right? Or is like a falsehood. Like, I thought we were in a position where we were friends.
Yes.
One. And friends, this issue of friends comes up over and over and over again. The word is in the text so much.
Yes.
And he's like, I thought we were friends. I thought we trusted each other. Clearly we don't. You've lied to me about multiple things along the way. And I might add, we are not done with Robin's lies. There is another big one that's coming.
Right.
And he's pissed. Alistair's pissed. And he's like, you need to leave.
Right.
And that's the end of act one.
Yep. Yeah.
And so you're like, well, that's the whole ball game, right? Like, as a reader, I'm done. Like, that's all I could imagine there being.
Well, and I was listening to the book. I don't know if I told you this. And I was like, okay, so I guess the book must be over soon. And I was like, wait.
No, it's like Lord of Scoundrels. It's like Lord of Scoundrels, right?
Right.
It has this, like, sense of, like, well, now this piece is done. And now we see how this the misunderstanding plus the conversation has just fucked shit up, right?
Yes, right.
And then comes my favorite part of this whole book, which is revenge was best left to the cuckolded.
I was like, I like revenge like hoarder culture is beneath me.
Yes. So the full line is, revenge was best left to cuckolded farmhands and medieval popes, jealous fishwives, and mad Plantagenets. Like, the fact that Alistair is sitting in his house festering, right? Yes.
Right.
He is trying to figure out how he can just, like, wreck this person who has made him feel feelings.
Yes, God forbid. And I think the thing, though, is this is where first act Alistair then kind of comes in to save him and us, right?
Yeah.
He is horrified of being embarrassed or airing out his dirty laundry or whatever. And so he kind of realizes that if he is to make a big example, a big public to-do about what Robin and Amelia have done, he, like, the horror of everybody knowing his business is far worse than the business itself, right? So he just decides to sort of, like, I'm going to just kind of plod along and we're going to have the ball and I'm not going to really get involved in this. But his brother Gilbert...
Oh, Gilbert.
Right? We need some sort of catalyst. Turns out, of course, we all know immediately, a secret love with Amelia. I love how, like, Robin and Alistair are so blind and they're so in their own feelings about each other that neither of them notice that Gilbert and Amelia are clearly up to something. And Gilbert goes to Robin and says, you know, I don't know what happened between you and my brother. He is a total asshole. So just know... Just know that I'm sure if you went to him, you know, he would probably, like, you know, I'm sorry he was such a jerk. And Robin was like, no, you know, Robin says, it was my fault, actually. I'm the one who screwed up.
Kind of, but not really, Robin. But this is one of those moments, right? It's this sacrifice. I keep coming back to this. There's this, like, magnificent representation of how marginalized people are asked to take on like all these burdens, right? Like, anytime anything goes wrong, it's like the fault of women or marginalized people, emotionally. Like, and I think that is really beautifully done here, because it's not heavy. The weight of this as a reader, it doesn't feel heavy, but it does feel like Kat's always just sort of pointing out that, like, Robin is making sacrifices. They are always the one who is making the sacrifice.
Right.
Until the end of Act Two. So,
I
mean, it's really, Kat is masterful. This book is masterful. Yeah.
Well, they get back together. They have some really
great sex.
Oh, God, yes. I was like, oh.
Truly terrific sex.
For as locked down as Alistair is.
Woof.
He really knows what he's doing in the bedroom.
Yes, he does.
And I would also say it's really interesting for Robin, who we at this point sort of find out has actually was Robbie's lover. They'd missed having sex. It was, you know, how are you going to navigate that? And so it's also this ability, like, here they are. They can really, like, literally be, like, naked and real with each other. Oh, it's so good. It's so sexy. It's so hot. And, you know, and then Alistair is like, well, I've got a solution to our problem, which is we'll get married. And
yeah, become, 60% of the way through the book.
Right. And you'll become the Marchioness, what's it called? I'm like, I don't even know.
The Marchioness.
Right.
Yeah, he says, like, he's like, basically he's like, I've defiled you. And they're, I mean, what a dummy. What a dummy.
I know.
He's, I mean, I have to be honest, I really love a historical hero who's like, I've defiled you and therefore we must marry because they're always real dumb.
This is one of my favorite scenes in the
And
book,
he says, marry me, Robin. The POV shifts,
yes.
And the next line of the book is, she must have misunderstood.
Yes.
And then Robin says, excuse me?
Yeah.
And literally, they've just had an orgasm.
Right.
And then they're like, hang on a real second. So here we are, end of act two, right?
Sure. Like, but wait, can
everything's getting complicated. Go ahead.
Right? So, you know, he was an idiot. Right, they're in love with an absolute fool. How dare you? How dare you fuck me against the wall and then treat me like a damsel in need of respectability?
Look, I highlighted it too.
Of course, because it's so
good.
Perfect. This is one of my other favorite things in a book, and this is so brilliant, is when we as the reader also, and you know, I'm a cishet lady, right? I was kind of like, okay, sure, of course, at some point, I guess marriage is going to fix this. I mean, you know, Alistair, you're kind of fucking this up, but, you know, it, but this is a real moment where we get Robin's, like, and what they say is, like, I haven't worn a gown since Robbie died, and I don't yes. want to.
Listen, but this is where they give yes. up sacrifice.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
This is what I'm talking about. This is why Kat Sebastian is so good at this job.
So good, yes.
Because for two-thirds, and it is almost exactly two-thirds mm-hmm. of this book, Robin makes sacrifices.
Right.
And takes on emotional burdens that are not theirs.
Right.
To burden.
Yes.
To hold. To carry. Sorry. Right. I don't know what I'm saying.
Right.
But when this happens, and they play out the reality, which is yes. it is 18,
whatever.
And there is no possible way for a Marquis to publicly marry
right.
someone who wants to live their identity, not just as Robin, but as a name that is not theirs, right?
Right. Like, right.
There are all sorts of issues here, right? Which are like, when a Marquis gets married, there has to be like a church registry. And
right.
later, this gets brought up and sort of deftly solved.
Right.
But Robin discovers in that moment that in order to have Alistair, God, this conflict is so good. In order to have the thing they want most in the world, i.e. Alistair, they must give up the thing that is fully, that makes them who they are, right? Which is, their identity.
Right. Right.
Robin has to die in order for Robin to have Alistair.
Right. And this is the part that's so brilliant about this scene, right? They're really able to verbalize, like, and it's at this point, right? And I'm going to say they, the text says she, right? They didn't think they could explain the utter impossibility of living as a woman. They could hardly articulate it to themselves. Right? And that's the part, too, where it's like we really get, like, this is not them being stubborn, right? This is, I cannot live this way.
You are asking too much of me.
Right. It would destroy me, literally.
And I think, here, listen, this is what makes this book one of, I think, the best modern romances. Because this moment where one main character says to the other,
right,
I am through sacrificing myself for what other people want.
Right.
I am who I am. And that could be any number of things, sure, in any number of books. And therefore, and I have to be true to that first.
Yes.
Because you won't love me if that's not
right
who I am. And I think that moment, a sort of concrete moment where a main character says that in the text to a love interest, to a possible partner, mm-hmm, is so important. And that is a hallmark of a modern novel,
yeah,
a modern romance. I you agree. Didn't see that
right
in like early texts.
Right. And that's the thing, I think, in a later scene. And I, you know, I highlighted a lot in this book. I just thought, like, it's so important, right? The way that
it's such a good book
that Robin is able to, like, name what they need and also, like, name the ways in which, again, this is where, like, issues of class come up. There's really interesting things in here where they think about, like, Alistair's shame, right? And mm-hmm, Robin's like, shame is for rich people, mm-hmm, right? I can't live like that. And then later on says, they say to Alistair, did it occur to you even once that your notions of respectability and justice don't mean a thing to me? Those ideas have never done me any good, so why should I care? Can you even contemplate what it's like to be a person your rules work against? And this, it's, I feel like, any book where a main character gets to, like, really speak their truth so powerfully and be heard, that's mm-hmm, romance. That's romance.
Yes. Yes. Right? And that's where we've seen Alistair kind of unravel and crack, mm-hmm, over the course of the second act of this book. He's no longer the jerk he was at the right beginning. And so we're seeing him warm up. But then in the third act, he really has to reconcile himself with what he wants.
Right.
And what he is asking from Robin versus what he should want Robin to right have.
Right.
Right? This is where these two are figuring out how to be partners. It's all identity at this point.
Sure. And with identity in this case comes power. Right?
Yeah. Because I mean, yes.
Always, right? And so, and by the way, in the third act, I mean, the second act is in some ways, I mean, you know, it's just awesome. They're friends and they're lovers and it's hot and they're like, you know, there's sort of this sense of, okay, like, you know, the chemistry is unreal and they're like, okay, we're going to figure this out. But the other, like, but in the third act, right, the plot comes roaring back because, right?
And it comes roaring back like an old school romance. Yes, right? Suddenly, everything's going wrong.
Right? Because, oh, guess what? The cousin who should have inherited when Robbie died is suspicious.
And we're like, oh, wait a second.
Right? Amelia and
Gilbert,
Gavin, whatever his name is, right, are like,
these two dummies can't get themselves to Gretna Green, well, despite trying multiple times.
Because they are convinced, I mean, this is the other great thing, because of the, like, sort of, and this feels almost madcap, right? Like, everyone's talking about these, like, the wedding and the proposal and who turned down who. And again, Robin and Alistair are like, people know what happened between us. And instead, Amelia is afraid that Alistair is trying to marry her, right?
And amazing.
It is. It's
and also amazing. There's like a rainstorm in this,
yes,
where Alistair gets to go, where Robin rides out into a storm and is in danger, yes, and then Alistair has to ride out after them to find them, and then he turns up in the doorway of an inn. It's an inn, right?
Sure.
And he's dripping wet and full of rage. And I'm like, yes, put it in my veins.
Oh, completely, right? So they're off to, like, stop. So Amelia and Gilbert, they're, like, going to try. And essentially, it's really interesting. They're like, Robin's like, I have to let Amelia know I approve of this match So, you know, Amelia is like, you know, Robin's like, I can't let Amelia think I don't approve. I have to take off after them. And, you know, Alistair's like, I'm coming after you guys too.
It really is fabulous. Delightful. Like, it's just a constant madcap, like, journey.
Yeah.
Then the maybe biggest lie.
Yes.
Comes to be revealed, which is that Robin, back in the day, was married to Robbie.
Yeah.
And it comes to pass because the solicitor turns up.
Yes.
And is like, listen, you can do whatever you want, and you can marry some church mouse. That's fine. But bigamy is not a problem.
Okay. You're like, what?
And I'm like, this is the greatest book that was ever written.
Honestly.
So, but then in this, in this like perfect Cat Sebastian moment, Alistair is not, like, mad.
Right.
He's like, this poor, my poor love.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
Who has really been through it. And it turns out that Robin was married to Robert. And that if Robin had, at the time, allowed Robert to be declared dead,
right,
they would have received £1,000, which would have been a lot of money
for
a kid who, because they were kind of a kid then,
right,
who had been left in the doorway of a church,
right?
But instead of doing that, Robin decided that they were going to stay true to Amelia and help her and be her sibling.
Right.
And it's powerful and it speaks to this found family thing and it's understandable. And it's again one of these moments where you see Robin as sacrifice.
Yeah.
But again, as a foil to, in that case, Robin was sacrificing for something that they loved and for a future that they believed that would make them happy,
right?
Or give them hope and happiness and joy. And instead of sacrificing, you know, identity.
And they essentially like nurtured and cared for Amelia since Amelia was a baby. I mean, this relationship between them is so, these ties are so strong.
Yes.
And so it's inconceivable that Robin would sort of abandon Amelia with nothing. And so they kind of hatched this plan together. And it's always been like, we're going to fix it with Cousin Clifford or whatever the heck his name is. Right? Once we get Amelia married, like, we'll be able to do this. And of course, Clifford is like, you know, steps in just that moment. And, you know, it's, and I honestly think it's hard for Robin to kill off Robert Selby, but that always had to happen. It always had to happen. And I ended up really liking, like, you know, then it's kind of like, well, what are they going to do? Are they going to disappear, go on a boat to America? You know, Alistair kind of sees in the paper that there's been a boating accident and Robert Selby died. And he's like, oh my God, I'm never going to be able to find Robin, right? It's this terrible moment. And then Robin actually sort of has this like moment of clarity where they're like, look, this very rich, powerful man loves me. I bet his money and power can be used to make this fucking work.
I mean, I gotta say, that is probably the greatest joy of writing a historical.
Yeah.
Is like, oh, they have a title. Well, you can wave a lot away with a title. Yeah. Right. And at one point, Robin says, you know, you'll be married and everyone will say your wife runs around in men's clothing and you'll have to bear the scandal.
Yeah.
And Alistair's like, I'll bear it with pleasure.
Like, yeah.
I get to be with the person I love.
Right.
And I also just want to say there's that moment where he goes back and he sees Robin dressed in women's clothing.
Right.
And they're so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And in that moment, you're sort of led to believe that this, you know, his realization that Robin is uncomfortable in this vessel is, you know, his moment of clarity. And then when he leaves, there's a gift for Robin, and it's men's clothing.
Yeah.
And with a note that says, just in case.
Yeah.
You know, So it's, again, it's like,
yeah,
find somebody in life who sees you and loves you and wants you for you.
Right.
Right?
Right. Oh, and then there's a part at the end where, like, Robin finds, like, dusty old clothes at the end, comes down, and you can tell that Alistair's super into it. It's like, you look like a corsair. Right? It's hot. Like, these two are going to have a great, super fun mm-hmm. sex for the rest of their lives, and I'm for mm-hmm. it. But I think that, you know, for me, reading this book was, oh my God, like, there's a lot of talk about plotting and, you know, the third act breakup and, right? This book's plotting is meticulous.
It's so tight. It's so good. And it's so good in part because it feels like a classic, I mean, I can't describe it any other way. Like, it feels like a classic old school romance, just like pulled through yes. to 2017. And it's like Kat sat down and she took all the best things
yeah.
out of those old books and left all the garbage.
Right.
And then was like, I'm going to renovate yeah. these characters.
Right. I think I read I was really curious. This book was such a big deal when it came out. So I was really curious if there were, like, interviews where Kat talked about the book or her work. And one of the things, there was a great interview in Jezebel, I'll put it in show notes, where it's, like, interview style. So it's, like, question and answer. And the question was sort of, like, do you think Regencies are inherently conservative? And mm-hmm. there's this great answer where Kat says, you know, I think there is something, like, small c conservative about it, right? And what she says is, you know, romance novels, whether they're historical or contemporary or even paranormal, reaffirm the social structure where people pair up and form ties within a pre-existing community and often have children, right? And that sense, it, like, romance novels are showing you the building blocks of society, and that is small c conservative, right? Mm-hmm. Of course, there are exceptions, mm-hmm. but, you know, she says you're building within that structure. And I think that's why this book really does, like, harken back to, like, kind of those old school, like, this is a book that's fundamentally about how wonderful it is to find people you love and form connections and families with them and, like, make mm-hmm. sacrifices for them because it makes you feel good to make the people you love happy. That is a real pleasure. That is, like, the ultimate pleasure for, I mean, I'm not famous. I'm not rich. What I have is my family and my friends. And this is a book that really, mm-hmm. I don't know. It's delightful. I loved it.
I told you you would.
You told
me. It's a great book.
This is one of those books where I'm effing horrified that I didn't read it back when it was so popular and everyone was reading it, and I put it on my Kindle and just never got around to it. Horrified.
Yeah. Well, now you've rectified the problem.
I have. What a delight.
And here you are. And now you have it, and you can recommend it to 1,000 people.
I would also say this book is genuinely funny. Like, yes. There are times I laughed out
Hilarious.
Loud.
Hilarious.
Alistair at the end gets a cat. And he, like, sort of has, like, an evil moment where he's, like, Perfect. Sitting with the cat. I mean,
yes.
It's just really terrific in a way that is,
yes,
this is what I want in a romance, right? It's real, but it was so fun to read.
We should say Kat has a new book out that came out two months ago. The Queer Principles of Kit Webb, which is a highwayman romance.
I mean, hello.
I mean, again, perfect for those of us who grew up on highwaymen romances. And generally, Kat is great. This book is great. We love it. A+.
A+. Absolutely. next week, we'll be talking about Love and Interstitial. I don't know. A couple other things. Sooner or later, we're going to... Last episode of season 3.
Yeah, we're coming up on the end of season 3. A
couple more weeks.
So we have a few things in store. Then we'll do a bombshell episode. We're going to do what we did last year and release the first 2 chapters of the audiobook. Did you listen to them yet, John?
I haven't yet because I was listening to this. Mary Jane Wells.
See, my audio narrator has switched to Mary Jane Wells for those of you who are romance readers in audio because Jen told me to pick her.
I was like, Mary Jane Wells.
Yes. And then I listened to the first. I've never listened to a full Two, I've never listened to any part of my audiobooks before. And I listened to the prologue and I was like, oh, she's good. So we'll release that too before Bombshell comes out. And then we'll do a Bombshell episode. And then it's season 4. And we've got some plans.
We sure do.
We're pretty excited. Get ready.
I feel like our focus is back.
Our focus is back. I do want to do a quick Ted Lasso check-in. The first episode of season 2 is great.
It was great.
There is a Roy Kent moment that is...
There are many Roy Kent
absolute
moments.
Chef's kiss, though, with Rebecca. And I'm for it.
I'm for it, too. So fun.
So far, Roy Kent check-in. We're fine with it. Everything's going great for us.
Tara, our listener, who her husband is Dewey, has... he had screeners for like the first 8 episodes and she's seen a bunch of it. And I was like, I'm not at all jealous. She says,
we feel fine.
We're going to keep feeling fine. And I believe Tara, she would never steer us wrong.
She would not. She would not. Anyway, thank you all so much for listening. This has been Faded Mates. I am Sarah. My friend here is Jen. You can find us at fadedmates.net. On Twitter at Faded Mates, on Instagram at Faded Mates Pod. Once again, join us for a live Faded Mates episode on August 24th. Links are in show notes and on all of our social media. Go to the website, fadedmates.net, to find merch from best friend Kelly and from Jordan Danae. And I think that's it. Is that it?
That's it.
Do we have other stuff?
I don't have anything else.
We hope you're reading great books this week.